Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never sing again. Believe in a power greater than what you are going through. When you don't know what to do,
that's right. When you don't know what to do, just keep on breathing. From the City of Angels in Los Angeles, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I'm Dave, the caregiver's caregiver at caregiverdave.com. Also coming to you live and on demand 24/7 on numerous syndicated radio and podcast networks on 26 global audio and video platforms like iHeartRadio, iTunes, YouTube, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Vimeo, Stitcher Radio, Blog Talk Radio, and a whole bunch more. And in fact, we're proud to be voted number one caregiver podcast of the top 50 on Player FM and number two caregiver podcast on FeedSpot out of the top 60 and number two caregiver podcast on CaringVillage.com. And we have an especially exciting show planned for you today. Almost didn't have enough breath to say that. Deborah Lee Fader was enjoying a multifaceted vocal career in theater, broadcasting, and musical ministry, always family-oriented, ball of energy. Deborah Lee appeared to have it all. Then one morning, she literally fell out of bed, unable to walk. And I was going to read your accolades, but there are just so many. I want you to go over that. But before we do that, I do want to thank last week's guest, Dr. Leica's Brush with Death, and how he helped overwhelmed caregivers hang in there. And just a reminder, you can watch or listen to that interview and all our interviews on our membership website, caregiverdave.com. or any of our other 26 global networks that I mentioned earlier. All right, enough of that. Deborah Lee, welcome to the Caregiver Dave Show. We're so excited to have you on.
Thank you so much, Dave. I'm really happy to be here. Cool. It means a great deal.
And I always like to ask my guests, just who is Deborah Lee Fader and why was she placed on this earth?
Well, I really believe that I was placed here to bring happiness to people through my singing and my dancing and acting, and then moving on from there.
Just a cabaret show, aren't you?
I did have a cabaret show for many years. It was an acclaimed show, and I performed on ships. I performed in Las Vegas on the Strip, wow. In Reno, Atlantic City.
You're like famous.
Well, I don't know about that. I tried my best to be at the top of my success, meaning the people
top
that I was
game, yeah.
working with. Yes, and it was a great career. I decided to move back to Minnesota to start broadcasting, and I met my husband in Minnesota, in Montevideo, Minnesota, when I was on the air there on the radio stations.
Oh.
And yeah, so it changed my whole trajectory of my career. I had an opportunity to go to Japan, but I met the guy and decided I wanted to pretty much stick around and set down roots in Minnesota. And that was in 1994. And I haven't looked back since. It's been a wonderful career. I was a mayor. I was mayor of Montevideo, Minnesota for 8 years. I went to our sister city, Uruguay, Montevideo, that is, they call it Montevideo. And I was there at the request of their mayor. And I met the president at that time and the first lady, and just had a wonderful time with all of the officials and dignitaries. Worked with the embassy down there to bring about more cultural exchange between our two countries. It was a marvelous experience. And but prior to that, I will digress. I was living in Savage, Minnesota. My husband and I were there for probably 5 to 7 years. And one day I got out of bed. I fell flat on my face.
Oh, my.
Yes. And I couldn't move. I could only drag myself. I was the only one home, plus the dog. And I could only drag myself to the nearest phone to start making phone calls to say I was in dire need of some help because I couldn't move whatsoever. And that was in 2006 during the holiday season. And it was such of a change in my life. I couldn't do ministry. I couldn't do anything except try my very best to stay alive. All of my organs were shutting down, and it was very dire. We thought we were going to lose me, and made some changes occupationally wise, and bought back our family business in Montevideo. And then I slowly recovered until I could recover no more, and I couldn't walk. I was walking with canes and with other aids. And then if I would get sick, I would be unable to get onto my feet. So I was in and out of wheelchairs. Just give me a cold, give me a sniffle, and I'm in a wheelchair up in the emergency room.
Oh, wow. Still?
Not so much anymore because
praise God.
Yes, praise God. It has to do with belief. You have to believe in something larger than yourself. And I always have believed in God and prayers. And we had many people praying for me to fully recover. I'm grateful to have the recovery that I do. I would say I have, on a good day, I have about 90% of my body. It's usually at a 75% range. But I'm very grateful to have use of my limbs, even though it is a little bit difficult. And I'm grateful to have my husband and my family and friends who have traded off caretaking me through the years. But my husband is my primary caregiver. And I understand how tough it can be for a caregiver, how you can get burned out. And I guess I'm here today to pretty much explain the side of the person that's being cared for, because it's very, very tough to relinquish control of your own self to other human beings. You feel so guilty and you worry about the caretaker actually being cared for. So it's a big responsibility, and between your caretakers, you must be a team. You have to be team players. You know you're in it for the long haul. Pray about it, and make your life as full as you possibly can together and also separately. So,
wow. So you're a walking, talking miracle.
Oh, yes. Thank you very much. I appreciate that. I truly, truly am. Shouldn't
I believe in miracles?
Me too.
Because I'm looking at one.
Oh, God bless you. Thank you so much.
So you live on Lake Minnewaska, right?
Lake Minnewaska. It's in the area of the Alexandria Lakes. We are the largest, or I shouldn't say the largest, we're the largest lake in that area. We're the 13th largest lake in the state of Minnesota, which is, of course, the land of over 10,000 lakes.
It's so hard to believe, My wife's brother lives in Minnesota, and he lives on Lake Minnetonka.
And that's much larger than our lake, but ours is 27 miles around. I know that, or straight across, I believe, too. But Minnetonka is a huge lake, and several inlets and islands, and it's an exciting place.
I haven't been out there yet. I keep promising I'm going to go, but I don't know. It gets pretty cold in the winter time. He goes ice fishing.
That's one of the things we do too. It's very
too?
Exciting. Yes, we have fish house, and my husband's out there.
Yeah,
all
I saw
the
that
time.
On that movie, Grumpy Old Men. Remember that scene?
Yes. Oh, in fact, a long time ago, our son and myself and a few friends, whenever he would have maybe a contrary point of view, we would call him Walter, one of the grumpy old men.
Yes.
We would say, okay, Walter. So, but he's not like that anymore. He's had such of a baptism in caretaking. I wish he would come on the show, but he's not that kind of a person. He's much more private than I am. So I'll just do my best to fill you in on what we go through, whatever you want to know.
Well, you know, our audience
within
is
burned
out caregivers. And as you know, I'm a caregiver to my wife for 26 years now. And sometimes, you know, when we have those rough days, I wonder who has the tougher job, me as a caregiver or her as a care receiver. And as a disabled person, she lost her speech and was paralyzed on one side, but she reinvented herself. She can do practically everything she did before with one arm and one leg tied behind her back and duct tape over her mouth, basically.
That's fantastic. She has the spirit.
Yep.
She's interested in being living her best life, being her best self.
Yep.
And that is what it's all about. You have to be a champion. She, you know, I give her so many props for what she's accomplished.
And
that
I like to feel I played a part in that, because, you know, instead of like her mother, for example, was always, oh, here, let me get that for you. Oh, no, here, you can't do that. Oh, no, you can't cook dinner. I'll do it. You know, and I was saying, yeah, do it, do it. And she's reaching for something. Yeah, a little higher. Go on your toes. And I'm pushing her up there, you know. And her mother thought I was cruel, but the occupational therapist said that I was creating an independent person instead of a bedridden person who was dependent on anybody and everybody.
Absolutely. My husband's the same way. He's always he's a driving force.
Yeah,
he never says, okay, you sit down. I mean, I have to tell him, I really can't. Don't push me anymore. I can't take it.
It's like he's an occupational therapist.
Yeah, he's just like that. And he pushes me to continue with the occupational therapy. There have been times I want, oh, I think I'm, you know, I'm doing fine. He'll say, no, you need to go back. You're slipping here. He's always watching everything. And, you can't get anything by these people.
She had an Indian physical therapist, and you know, we had this big pool table, and she was telling her, walk around the table, walk around the table. Go, Charlene, you can do it, you can do it. She goes, no, yes, one more time, come on. She's like an army sergeant.
Yes, and that's kind of how I have to do things. It's like being a drill sergeant, and you have to respond with that discipline and stick-to-itiveness to make it happen over and over and over again. That's what practice. I remember from being a little girl and learning how to dance. Practice makes perfect. Learning how to sing. Practice makes perfect. And that's what you do. And you have to keep your brain occupied. So the practicing helps the synapses in the brain to find another path to make you vital. So. Yeah. I think your wife she's got it together.
Have you ever been a caregiver?
I have not. And it has been really interesting to be the person on the receiving end. I've always loved people and have never had any differences within myself when I would see someone that was disabled. Or to be around them, they just seemed just like me, only that they're sitting in a chair or they're walking with a cane or they're, you know, having a little trouble getting out of the car, whatever it is, I would always try to help. So having been on that side of trying to help others, it's really tough to relinquish that control of wanting to help somebody else.
Yeah.
And apply it to yourself that you need to sit back and let others do for you.
Yeah, well, you know, caregivers hate to ask for help. They think they can do it themselves. But the care receivers sometimes are shamed into not asking for help when they need it. Yes? Who has a harder time asking for help, you or your husband? I assume
my
your
husband,
caregiver.
Absolutely, my husband. He will never ask for any kind of help. And whenever I know he's having a health issue, it's don't worry about me. Don't worry about me. But you do. You worry about who is taking care of your caregiver.
Yeah.
So then you just have to
put your oxygen mask on first.
Yeah. Well, and when you have COVID, for instance, during COVID, the wearing of masks and all of those things applied to everyone. And it was kind of tough because when you're the care person, the person that's being cared for, the caregiver is very frightened that you might mix in with a crowd and then someone has COVID. That was a tough thing to go through. But hopefully we all, those of us that were vulnerable, did receive our shots and were able to still be viable members of society. So
what happens when it all falls apart for you and your husband? What do you do?
Well, for us, especially for us, I am such of a strong believer in God, and so is my husband. I do things in a way they call it like an elevator bell ringer. But my husband is more, you know, in the basement with the way he worships. So between the two of us, I always get out devotions. I have little cards that have devotional sayings on them, and we go through those. And then another thing we do is I try to say in a supportive way, go do a hobby, you know, go fishing for a while, go out and take a walk.
Ice fishing.
Yeah. Yeah, ice fishing, which he loves. He loves to do that. Any kind of fishing, he'll be out there. So go and make the most of your time, your alone time. Have fun with your friends. Go hunting, fishing. Like I said, any of the things you really enjoy, go and do those things. Go visit your friends in another city. You know, whatever it takes, just, you don't need to be at my beck and call all the time.
Wow.
Have a day. Fill your day with as much of life as you can, because then when you come back, you've got the zest to sort of start all over again. Each day's a new day. That's another thing between the two of us. One day at a time. We just have to take it one day at a time.
You're a nice care receiver. Some aren't that nice. You know, they're very demanding. Okay. And they're very selfish. It's all about me, you know, self-centered. Oh. And, you know, you can't blame them. I mean, they're disabled, and it is all about them right there. But
the smart ones know
how to notice when the caregiver needs a break, because if you just keep running them into the ground, you know, they're going to either become hospitalized, die, 30% die, or need a caregiver of his own. And then where is that going to leave the one that they're being cared for? You know, usually some other family member will take over who's not as compassionate, and they may throw you into a nursing home.
Now that's a frightening thought.
It is.
It happens a lot. I'm sure it does. And the more that we need to depend upon other people,
because it takes patience and empathy and all those things. Not everybody has those qualities, you know?
No. And if you don't have those qualities, believe me, what I say when somebody is putting me down or, you know, saying something, I just say, better me than you, not the other way around.
Yeah.
Better me, because I can, you know, suck it up, basically.
Well, everyone falls into two categories. You're either going to need a caregiver one day, mm-hmm. or you're going to be a caregiver. So it's inevitable. You know, there's no escaping it. So
it comes with aging. It's just that for some of us, we get baptized a little bit more earlier in life than the others do.
And your kids are watching, your grandkids are watching. So if you're not doing a good job, chances are they'll take bad care of you when that day comes, you know?
I don't know. My grandchildren are so wonderful to me that they want to help. They love to help.
Oh,
and they're just raised so well by their parents. The parents are really good as a team. And so these kids, they, you know, grandma needs this, grandma needs that, whatever. And, you know, and then we try to do things together and have fun. So
are you a believer in support groups?
Oh, yes. I think support groups are the most important thing to helping anyone who's going through a difficult time, be it a caretaker or grief, or maybe you have a dependency on something, that a substance abuse. I don't know. You could name several things. I really think a group that you can sit, a group of your peers that are trying to also improve themselves, I think that's very important. Get into some sort of a solid group where you can let down your hair, let out your feelings, and then try to improve. and cut yourself a break. You know, you can't be perfect.
Grace.
Pardon? Yeah, you can't.
That's called grace. Yes.
Grace. It is called grace. And God gives it.
Grace is getting something you don't deserve. Well, mercy is not getting something you do deserve.
Oh my goodness, is that the way to say it? Yes, we must be merciful in life and with others around us.
Did your husband go to caregiver support groups?
He has. He's gone to different things.
And they helped, I assume.
Sure. Yes, they do.
Good.
I just try really hard to not take advantage of him.
So you're a good patient.
I try to be. I don't know if I truly am. I could be a better patient.
Just having that attitude makes you a great patient.
Oh, thank you. I don't know. My doctors probably would roll their eyes. But so I do what I can.
Let's talk about the living space. Was your house, did you have to change a lot of things?
Well, when I was first diagnosed, let me explain that I was misdiagnosed for several years. So we didn't make any changes, and I'd be stumbling around and I'd walk into a wall it was not fun. because I'd wake up and I'd have a little bit more energy when I woke up in the morning, and just even 2 hours later, I could take a nap, actually, how I felt. But when I was finally diagnosed properly down at Mayo Clinic in Rochester, Minnesota, I had occupational therapy from our Montevideo local hospital come in, and they said, this piece of furniture has to go. You've got to have a smooth track for her to use a walker. And then they also sat with me and said, you're not going to be standing at the stove all the time. You're going to have to sit. So there's different things that we had to arrange with me to adjust my everyday daily tasks and routines. Mm-hmm. So it was a real eye-opener to have occupational therapy come in. And I was resistant, and my husband was resistant. Yeah. It was just, what do you mean we have to change this and we have to change our bathtub? She can't use a bathtub anymore. Mm. Well, we have to be safe. So then we have to put a cutout in the bathtub, and we had to do all these things. And
change was the word that you had to embrace.
Exactly. And we all are creatures of comfort. Let's face it. Everybody wants to keep things exactly as we are comfortable with them.
Yes.
And you need to be able to move outside of yourself, move outside of that comfort zone. And this is for both the one being cared for and the caretaker. And you have to be able to open your mind and make the changes. And once you do that, you both are able to be buffered into a safer way of doing things. So it's hard. It's hard to let go.
You said you were misdiagnosed. How did you find out the truth? I mean, did you get a second opinion?
I went to several different doctors. I went to
second, third, fourth opinion, huh?
Yes, many, many. First doctor, which was my internist, Dr. Gary Brunkow, actually saved my life.
Okay.
One of my tests for Lyme came back positive, and it was the Eastern blot on my Lyme. And so he saved my life by getting the right medication into my system. Mm. And then I had to have infusions for a few months, and I very slowly regained my ability to walk. And then what happened is we thought I was in the clear, and I wasn't. I should have had another round of some sort of steroidal drug to help me get through the hard time. And I didn't, because I just started sliding backwards. And
this all started with Lyme disease, all your problems?
Yes.
Were you bitten by a tick or something?
I was bitten by a tick. We think that we were hiking.
In Minnesota?
Yes, a very high level.
How common is that?
Very, very common. We have Lyme disease. Oh, we have MS. And sometimes I think it's because we just don't have enough vitamin D in our everyday life with the winter.
No
the
sunshine.
Summers are great. Yeah, no sunshine in the wintertime. Yeah. And, you know, you're indoors a little bit more. So you have
what else can you do to prevent that?
You can take a lot of vitamin D.
Yeah, and that's your only weapon, huh?
Well, it's a good one. Yeah. That's nature's way of handling it.
But wearing long sleeves, can they bite through a clothes?
Oh, you're talking about the ticks. Oh,
yeah,
sure. They can bite through anything.
Really? Just like mosquitoes, huh?
Yeah, they are. They're really dangerous.
Why would you want to live in Minnesota that has so many ticks?
Oh, this is home. This is home.
Yeah, we live in California with all the earthquakes. Florida has all the hurricanes. You know,
sure. Every state has its problems, I guess you could say. But the problem with ticks is you may not know that you have one on you. And that is kind of what we think happened with me, that the tick was very, very small. Now, for many years, there was no correlation between MS and Lyme disease. They were kept held.
Are you saying a tick can cause MS?
Well, yes, they finally have admitted that can take place. Yes, they have. But for so many years, they were not looking at that. People were finding, or medically, the FDA, or I don't
scary.
Know, the powers that be in the medical world would not put these two
sure.
diseases together and link them. But at this point, they have. So I can safely say that, yes.
So you are a lover of physical therapy, right? It helps
yes.
you. You
yes.
know, a lot of people are resistant to physical therapy. You know, I don't it's work and, you know, just leave me alone. Let me stay in my wheelchair. I mean, what's bad about that?
Well, energy is something that with MS and with my issues, energy is hard to come by. You only have so much of it per day, but there are ways that you can use the energy a little bit more properly. And that's what they teach you in physical therapy.
Mm.
And I believe that even if you're in a wheelchair, learning how to be able to do a couple of things for yourself that maybe you couldn't do before is very confidence building, and it helps you regain your self-esteem. So I really truly believe in physical therapy for anyone that has any affliction of any
kind.
It's
like they say, use it or lose it, right?
Yeah, exactly. I couldn't think of the phrase. I'm glad you brought
good thing
that.
You got me around here.
no kidding. So you lose it, or you know, if you're not using it, I went through maybe 3-4 months where I wasn't really doing all my exercises every day, and I started to really lose it. And my husband said to me, "You need to get back into physical therapy and try to regain your momentum."
Sounds like a smart guy.
Yeah, he is. Well, he doesn't want to have to work that hard every day. My goodness, I don't blame him.
Deborah, I can't believe how fast this time has gone. I know.
Yes.
It's so much fun when you're having fun.
Yes, thank you.
Let me ask you, how can people get a hold of you?
Oh, my goodness. Well,
you an author?
I am an author. I'm writing a book.
Tell us about your book.
It's Walk by Faith, and it's coming out very shortly. This is just a mock book to show you what it should possibly look like, okay?
Nice.
And what you can do is I have two different websites. It's called queenofkindness.org. It's a 501c3 charity.
Uh-huh.
And I also have diversityusa.org. That's another way you can reach me, and there are phone numbers there listed, and also there are emails. I'd be glad to talk to anyone who needs some help, either as a caretaker or as someone that might be falling behind because they need to be cared for. So whatever I can do, I'm here to help people. So give me a shout.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing all your wisdom. Let me just remind everybody that all our live shows become recorded pod and video casts on all your favorite networks. You can purchase my number one newly released book, Secrets from the Hammock, Uncommon Wisdom for Uncommon Times. It's a great book that's changing lives all over the world. The only way to eliminate negative effects of unwise choices is to start making wise choices. And we're so proud that it's a number one international bestseller so far, like on the second day. So it is available wherever books are sold and my website, caregiverdave.com, which is a free membership support community. Lots of tools, resources, free gifts. And check out my Facebook page, Caregiver Dave, a community of 34,000 caregivers. And if you click the like or follow button on whatever platform you're watching or listening to this interview on, it helps us reach even more caregivers by improving Google's search engine algorithms. So thanks again to everybody out there who's all over the world, tuning in every Wednesday, making us the number one caregiver podcast on the internet. So until next week, same time, same channel. May God richly bless you all. Bye-bye. I'm Dave Nassani. My fourth book, Secrets from the Hammock, Uncommon Wisdom for Uncommon Times, is a number one bestseller on Amazon. As a young boy, I was told I possessed an unusual amount of wisdom for my age. As a young man, I found myself counseling friends and older family members whenever they needed answers to their problems. Then at 21, I read the Bible for the very first time and learned how King Solomon asked God for wisdom instead of riches, yet he received both. I was so impressed that I too asked God for wisdom. Soon after, I discovered when lying on my hammock, I would receive wisdom from God. This book is the result of my passion to share with the world wisdom's tremendous benefits. Join me as I reveal practical aspects of wisdom for the mind, body, and spirit. 31 lessons I learned from God that can change your life. Available in hardcover, Audible, Kindle, and paperback, wherever books are sold. I've spoken all over the country and London, and am available to speak at your event. Contact me at hammockwisdom.com.
Sometimes it feels like the sun will never rise, like the birds will never